Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello. I'm now going to, this is Dave Weiner, and this is Rebooting the News, if you can believe it, on TalkShoe, of all places. And it, with any luck, right now, you'll be able to hear the wonderful, sterling voice of my very good friend, Rex Hammond. Rex?
Hey, Dave.
Oh, man.
Is it working?
I have no clue.
Well, you have no clue. Can you hear me, I guess? We can
I can hear you fine.
Okay, well.
I had no idea whether I was actually hear your voice when I said that.
I was in doubt, too, because it wouldn't accept my PIN number unless I dialed through my cell phone, so that's fine. We're here.
You know, we usually just gloss right over the stuff, but this is a really good point, that this is like technology getting in the way, you know. I mean,
yep.
It seems like it's a fairly simple thing to do, to give me some instructions to give to you. I mean, that was the, never mind that I had trouble getting through myself. Like, I called the show, what I used to do on Blog Talk Radio is call in, you know, 10, 15 minutes before. And I would tell guests to do the same, because that way, if there were glitches, we would have the 10 or 15 minutes with which to scramble to try to get the thing working. And so when I did that myself, it started recording with fault. It's like, no, I want to press a button when I want to start recording a call. You know? And that was just the beginning of the comedy of errors that, you know, actually got us to this point. And I'm feeling pretty optimistic that there'll be an MP3 at the other end of the line here. So,
well, there's a little line at the top that says call is being recorded. So
if
they don't do it, then it's they're lying to us.
Right.
Hey,
by the way,
I mean it did say like, okay, call a phone number, but it didn't say what number to call. You know, there are several things that I think probably it should do. But I'm a user. You know, Dave. I think all through the years you've called me a user.
But you're not a user anymore, Rex. You're not.
I know. I kind of blew that. But no, I sort of was offended when you first called me that. But then I understood over time that's really, frankly, a good way to describe me, because I do tend to look at technology from that perspective, and as opposed to a developer who looks at things on, you know, how to do them. I'm always on the other end, I think, and that's one of the things that I do.
Well, that's not really true, because there is a world in which you're not on the other end, where you're in the sort of on the other side of the curtain, right?
Absolutely.
So why don't you explain to our listeners briefly what you do?
Well, what I do has stayed the same over the last 25 years. Now, what it's called has been different, but I used to be what I would call custom publishing. That's where a company, it's a marketing services business. However, it helps create magazines or web content or a lot of different things for associations and businesses who want to develop a direct relationship with their customers or members. So they want to create their own magazine, or they want to create their own newsletter, and as we move forward, their own website. Now, that used to be a somewhat radical notion, but you and I would see it today as, gee, you know, everybody should create their direct relationship. So what I do is help companies and associations create.
So wait, so you're saying that when you started this 25 years ago, this thought that they would have a direct line of communication with their users was a hard thing to get them to believe.
It's been around for 125 years, but it's still literally today people
are calling.
I don't
understand how people. I mean, marketing 101, right? I mean,
here's what you got to understand: the magazine world, and let's just talk about magazines because that's how I got started, and I still publish magazines. The magazine world, as it's described in the media, focuses on consumer magazines that are sold through the newsstand that have subscription advertising business models. But there's a lot of other magazines out there. In fact, the great majority of magazines are created and distributed in a different way. But when we think magazines and when media people write about magazines, they're focusing on those 3,000
right.
titles.
Right, okay. So who does it best? Give me an example. Give me an example of somebody who does this really well. Like, what's a great magazine? Do these kinds of magazines have names? Do you have a name for all?
Yes. Yeah. You know, if we were in the UK, I could mention, you know, probably the top 10 most circulated magazines, and people would recognize them. Because
give me one. Just
Europe,
give me one. I want to try to understand.
Any. If you own a car, if you own a BMW, if you will probably get a BMW magazine, and they're wonderful magazines. If you are a member of any association from the DAR, which we actually publish their magazines, you get a beautiful magazine. And that's probably one of the premium of joining. If you get National Geographic, it's a consumer thing.
See, I was thinking you were talking about trade associations and things like that. So I was thinking of the American Federation of Teachers or the various unions and things like that. But when you say BMW magazine, I understand what that means.
We have published magazines for the largest small business association. We publish magazines for a large purchasing cooperative that is in a B2B realm. Marketers have an opportunity to either buy advertising in someone else's medium to reach them or develop a direct relationship. And sometimes magazines make sense. I understand that totally.
It's the reason why I don't sell ads on Scripting News, because I think of Scripting News as an ad, you know. And it just makes no sense to me at all to have gone to all this trouble to have created this connection between me and the people that I want to talk to, then to sort of sell that to somebody else, to sell them something that, you know, is I can't make as much money doing that as I do.
I think our mutual friend and muse, Doc Searles, said best when he said, there's publishing that is a business model, and then there's publishing that supports a business model. And I think your blog and my blog supports a business model. I really don't know if my blog, I've never really sat down and thought about that, but
my blog
supports a business model, and then there are blogs that are business models and they carry advertising.
My blog is a business. Never mind the business model. That's too fancy. My blog is a business. And, if you walk into a deli in New York, you'll see lots of advertising, right? You won't see very many ads for things that they don't sell. So that's sort of a clue there. It's what leads me to think that advertising is a vestige of the 20th century, and that that the kind of marketing that you're talking about and that I believe in is we don't want to sell the attention that we've managed to gather, because to us that's sort of like the profit on the profit, you know.
When it comes to my personal blogging and tweeting and those things that we follow each other on, I couldn't agree with you more. Those are not an advertising business model. I can tell you that my involvement in those things has led to a lot of business opportunities and friendships and other things that have benefited me, but they are not, I don't consider them, they support, I guess, a business model, in your case, a business, but they aren't.
That isn't doing too well, by the way, I should mention.
What's that?
It isn't doing too well. I mean, our revenue for the last X years has been, like, flat at zero. It still is a business in my mind, though. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it has.
Let me ask you, and maybe this is jumping into the news of the week or whatever, but why do you think that there's this continuation of the whole blogging is dying thing that is in the New York Times today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you and I both understand that, I don't know, it's not news. And it's pointless. I mean, either you believe it or you don't. And if you don't believe it, that's going to get you angry. And if you do believe it, then you'll find justification in it. And why do people believe it? I don't know. I mean, I think that Facebook and Twitter are blogging. And so I don't see that there's any net difference between doing it in one versus doing it in the other, except that one's more dangerous than the other. I mean, it's very dangerous to throw your lot in with Twitter right now as an author, as a user, you know, as we were talking. It's like, I felt it was like that for quite a while, if not always. But now it's completely evident. If you were paying any attention at all, which means if, like, you were using the service from a BlackBerry or from an Android phone over the weekend, you found out why you don't want to use Twitter and why you want to have your own way of communicating with the world that isn't subject to being so awfully manipulated by a company. You know, and the company basically ignored the fact that they have users and decided to punish a competitor of theirs. Twitter decided to publish Uber Media and just turn them off. And, you know, when they did that, they turned off millions of users. And didn't factor in very big in their calculation there. And but you know, that's, I think, much more interesting news than the article, yet another article in the Times proclaiming the death of their chief competition. I mean, it's nice to be able to write articles that say the thing that threatens your business the most just died, right? But it doesn't make it true.
Yep,
that's fine.
So Dave, again, I know that most of the people that listen to this show coming from you follow all these things, but probably, you know, I'm not as there are people who aren't as sort of steeped and understand what we're talking about. Can I just you know, ask and maybe give a quick update on? I understand when we say I find there's no problem for me to say I really like Twitter. I really am an advocate for Twitter. I use Twitter, but I think Twitter has too much power or too much control or the ability to do what we are talking about. And if people don't know what that is, to basically kick off a platform that people use to interact or manage their tweet stream or whatever one wants to call it. So how do you describe, okay, I like Twitter, but if people read you and follow you, they know that you are actively involved in trying to find ways to augment or get around, or however, if somebody's positive about what you're doing or negative, they're going to couch it different ways. But how do you explain that to someone who's less savvy I don't want to say savvy, less, you know, they don't read this stuff.
I don't know. That's something, you know, I mean, that's part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you today is that, we do, you know, we're here in New York, and that gives us a certain point of view, and you know, and we're insiders in a way, even though inside in my business is in Silicon Valley, so I sort of took a little bit of a step out there to get away from that. But you're the expert on that. I mean, what do you say to people? I mean, you've been doing this, explaining it to people that are in, you know, that are not insiders and they are not in Silicon Valley for a lot longer than I have.
Well, so I have really two groups that I talk a lot to. One of them is just made up of business friends that are not tech savvy at all. In fact, I had, you know, breakfast this morning with someone who has a small business here in Nashville who needs to understand some of the tools better. I could speak to him at one level, and then others, I speak a lot to publishers, magazine publishers. They tend to be association or business to business, not so much consumer. And I am, you're right, a lot of what I do is interpret what, you know, some of this stuff means.
Your battles, right? I mean, there's no reason. I didn't, like, fight a battle, and I'm still not fighting a battle, to try to get people to quit using Twitter. I don't think it's pointless. If I were to say to you today, Rex, look, stop using Twitter, I wouldn't say it because I can't do it myself. You know, I know one person, Daniel Bachhuber, who works at City University of New York, and a very bright young technologist, and he actually did quit using Twitter. And, you know, I'm doing it slowly. I'm, like, weaning myself off Twitter step by step. But, you know, the most radical thinking doesn't lead to action immediately, and it certainly doesn't in, you know, in far field of the inside of an industry or in, you know, in yeah. I mean, you know, somebody pointed out today, like, BlackBerries aren't used in business anymore, but that doesn't mean they aren't being used. They're being used in huge volume in the third world and in different cultures inside the United States that you and I probably don't know a whole lot about, you know. But it's very widely used. And so this is like, they are even more aware of the problem than even an insider in the tech industry is, who's never had their service cut off, okay? People in Egypt and Libya who've had their internet service, internet disconnected, have a perspective on the internet that we don't have. And it's a more advanced perspective, I think. I think we're going to be dealing with these kinds of outages, political outages, a lot more in the future, in the near future even.
Let me just say
that those outages affect everybody. They don't just affect the insiders. There's no more leading edge, Rex. I mean, you know, when everybody gets affected equally on these things, then we're all in this boat, you know?
And that, I think that, and you were saying this 3 years ago, and I was, you know, understanding and agreeing with you 3 years ago before Twitter was even what it is today. If a company, see, there's a Twitter business and there's a Twitter service. And the Twitter service is like, has become sort of the common carrier of all of what we call microblogging or whatever. It's the way you can message with, you can do all these things, but you can do it from a cell phone, basically. And a lot of the world doesn't have computers, they have cell phones. So people who use Twitter just on computers maybe don't understand that part too. So if the company that what I think that you and I, or at least I can't speak for you, I like the people at the company. I'm alarmed, however, when the people at a company also control the service and can do what they did this weekend, or really need it, when life or death or freedom or oppression is an issue, they have the resources are there so that the service can continue no matter what a government does or that company does. And that's where I think the
audience... Yeah, we're in agreement on this, right?
Right.
I mean, there's no dispute.
I agree completely with you. And I think that when one says anything about Twitter, you know, there's a lot of people that say, wait a minute, those people, you know, they started it, they deserve everything. Well,
absolutely.
CompuServe and AOL had their email, and if you could email other people on AOL, but it really didn't change the world until if you had AOL and I had CompuServe, we could email each other. And that's, I'm afraid that if you just can tweet to each other for people who use Twitter, and at some point, we're going to have issues. I mean, we are having issues.
No, we do. Come on, Rex, we do. It's no longer some point.
Right, you're right.
You know, I mean, you could draw out a timeline. I, you know, having been around this loop from the inside in the tech industry enough times, I mean, four or five times at least, to me, it's utterly predictable, you know, what's going to happen. Unless the people starting the company early on understand what is about to happen to them and make some really clear decisions early on that mean that they're going the other way. And they never do that. I mean, they always think they're going to have the same flexibility at every stage in the process. You know, I'll give you an example. What Twitter could have done early on is they could have backed away from being the central operator of this network and just said, we're going to be the naming authority, right? We're going to be the guy you go to get your name. And basically, you know, we're going to tell everybody else how to find you when they use your name, right? Which is equivalent to basically what VeriSign does for the internet. And I think that would have been an incredibly rich business to be in, and it would have been the kind of business that you need a staff of 25 people to operate. I mean, it's not like it is an unknown technology, nor is it particularly difficult technology. It's, you know, and it's proven to scale because the internet is built on it, right? But they didn't go that way, so it was absolutely certain that they would hit this wall because, they started out with being something that they couldn't be long term, which is the host of a medium. Companies can't do that. Companies can't scale up to that size where they can host a medium. And did Twitter have that potential? I don't think that once it got past a certain point, I don't think there was any doubt that it was on its way to becoming a medium, and that it would become a medium. I would say that, maybe 2007 or 2008, it was pretty obvious this is where it was going, and that would have been early enough for them to have made that decision. They didn't do it, so we're here, and this is where we were going, no matter what. But maybe there are some things that we disagree on.
Okay, let's look for those.
Yeah, because those are interesting. I mean, Rex, I feel like I've known you now for, 15 years or something?
Probably 11 or 12 at least.
Okay, 11 or 12, right. They've been interesting 11 or 12 years, and when you get to be our age, 11 or 12 years isn't that much time, right? But then you realize that it's just as much time no matter how old you are. just goes a little faster. And
you can go
from
kindergarten to graduating from high school in that period.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. I mean, I feel like there are people that I know really, really well because I went to college with them, right? And that was 3.5 years, 4 years, whatever, That's not very much time, and I didn't spend a lot of time reading what they wrote because none of us wrote very much, and nor would it have been very interesting to read because, whatever. However, I have read you consistently for many years and always find your stuff very interesting, and so I'm thinking of two things we might disagree on. One is I'll say both of them, you can pick which one you want to talk about, all right? Is this whole movement to readability and Flipboard and Instapaper and that whole class of the thing that Rupert Murdoch just shipped, which I know you don't like and I don't like either. And then the other question would be WikiLeaks. How do we feel about WikiLeaks? I think we might have different opinions about those things. So pick one and talk a little bit about it. What do you think?
I can speak more to the first topic than, and I'm sure I might surprise you. Let's give both of those a shot. But let me say one parenthetical thing before I talk about the readability issue. That is my son, who's now 20 years old, who probably as we started, he probably first heard your name with me just in conversation saying Dave Weiner, 10 or 11 years ago. So he's probably 8 or 9, and if you've been around 8 or 9 year olds, they hear everything, they don't forget everything. So several years goes by, and I get a friend request from a guy in my son's high school who I don't know. And so I email my son, who probably that was the first time he knew I was on Facebook, I guess. It was a Facebook request. I said, who is Cyrus? And my son goes, he's a geek. And I said, what do you mean he's a geek? He says, he's somebody who knows who Dave Weiner is. So in my household, your name is even known. So if somebody knows your name, then they fit into a class of that's dad's techie friends or whatever. So, I've learned a lot from our conversations. And frankly, we communicate a lot of times when we're not directly communicating. So I appreciate that, and frankly, you've taught me a lot about the tribal nature of technology that I didn't know, and the politics, which I cared to know nothing about, that I sort of through vicariously learned that who says something sometimes outweighs how smart it is. So I've learned to tune out a lot of things. But let me if you want to go back to the question of readability, I I believe that people, it's hard to learn about a technology unless you use it. In fact, probably a mutual acquaintance of ours, a friend, Joey Ito, used to say that Japanese learn a lot about technologies because they hand it to children and they let the kids play with it, and then they wait about 6 months and they just see how the kids are playing with it, and that's when they determine what the business is. We often, in our culture, tend to try to come up with a business reason for technology and then enter into the, you know, trying to define, you know, what it is. I mean, what it is. Mm-hmm. I think we're in a phase right now of a lot of publishers trying to define what the iPad and e-book readers are going to be about. And so they're creating what they think e-book or iPad apps should be, and they're getting it wrong. And
right.
One of the ways they're getting it wrong is by trying to take this approach that let's make it like a magazine, except let's add all these gimmicks to it. Let's add interactive stuff that's meaningless, or let's add a little video, and then we can charge extra for it. And what they have is just this bloated, hard to navigate, and because they often make up their own navigation systems. They're just, frankly, dumb. I mean, there's no reason.
Mm-hmm.
By using technology, however, by getting the Kindle when it first comes out, by getting all this stuff and not making preconceived notions about how people are going to use it, but just being a user, you can learn a lot. And I learned a lot, even though I was dismissive a little about the Kindle and said it's dumb, it's a hard user interface, you know, the hardware's stupid. They did things, and I discovered I was reading a lot more than I had ever read.
Yeah,
and I'm
a
big book reader. So I tried to analyze, just not analyze in a scientific way, but say, why am I reading more? Why is this?
Why? You tell me. I don't really get it. I mean, I could be reading just, I don't understand why, because I read like one book at a time still. And, I mean, it's true that I start a lot more books this way, but I still don't understand why I read a lot more. And I don't read with the Kindle, by the way. I read with my iPad.
Well, no, I do. I'm talking about back in the day when there wasn't an iPad. I started using a Kindle. But are you saying you don't read more, or you do?
No, I do. I absolutely do. But I don't know why. That's what I'm asking you. Why? What? Do you have a theory about that? Why we read more?
Yes, I have a theory, and I can again, I can only speak for
myself.
Maybe
you know. Maybe you actually know why.
I mean, there's several reasons. I mean, you and I are. Probably because we listen to certain radio shows and we read certain feeds, we learn about books a lot more than. But we now have a way to act on that. There's this, $9. I'll take a flyer on that. And
you know, it's been actually the other way with me more is that I now listen to more. I listen to the New York Times Book Review podcast now, and New Yorker magazine has a fiction podcast which is phenomenal. And I listen to those now because I read more. You know, it's not the other way around.
Again, you are saying what book publishers need to hear because it feeds on
stuff.
More
books
you read,
books.
The more you want to learn about what's out there, and the more you buy.
Why people say there's something about curling up with a book. I mean, I find curling up with my iPad a lot easier than curling up with a book.
Well, no, but they're saying the same thing, Dave. They're saying the same thing, Dave. I think that there has been this conventional wisdom over a long period of time that if you're going to put content, digital content, people automatically thought, oh, that's content that one has to sit at a desk and look at a screen. And the iPad, and frankly, that's why the Kindle gave me a little bit of a head start, a year and a half head start, while I was waiting on the iPad, to learn that, gee, if I can interact with a screen while I'm sitting in a comfortable chair at evening, or it's not a laptop that's burning my legs, and I can, if I don't, and then you have the interactivity part that, hey, I don't know the definition of this word, you know, I can look it up instantly. So you discover that, hey, it's not curling up with paper, and it's not maybe books you love, it's reading you love.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think if you find new ways to put content or books in front of people where they can, number one, purchase them instantaneously, organize them in the same platform, and then read them whenever they want to read them, when they are comfortable, you'll find that you've created a whole new way, a whole new distribution, a whole new business, a whole
that
new everything.
That is the theme,
and,
isn't
and
it?
And you shouldn't do it in the same way you did the old business.
Right. And in fact, it's a very interesting contrast. You know, as you were describing what the magazine publishers were doing, what I was thinking was that they were creating the kind of magazine that people would have imagined in, like, 1993, you know? As I say, you know, sit down, go to a conference, a publishing industry conference. I went to these, by the way. I used to be a regular at Siebold, and they had a whole thread in there on magazines. I mean, that's what it was about, really. It was, you know, magazines and books and manuals and brochures, advertising and stuff like that. All the print stuff. And you, if you were to go to a panel at Siebold in 1993 and listen to them talk about what magazines are going to look like in the future, they would have described the daily. That's what they would have described.
Absolutely.
You know?
I
and that's the, so in a way what they were trying to do at, you know, is like, let's go back in time and pretend none of this stuff happened. Now what would we do? You know, and they came out with a pretty good demo of what they would have, you know, it was, a more realistic demo, but still just a demo of what they, and, you know, they took everything out that was good about the internet. You know, it was like all of the ability to share stuff and to create new news flows out of the ones that they, you know, I mean, it's not that they don't have a role in the future. I think we've seen that they clearly do. If they want to acknowledge, you know, the new technology, also TV was like that. Oh, go ahead.
Let me give you an example, Dave. I, in fact, went to those same Siebold conferences. We could have met even earlier if we had known that.
Yeah.
But there was always some, you know, session way at the end on XML, and, you know, people.
Yeah, that's those.
There
ones
was always
that I was
this vision.
Right?
We can distribute this content in a different form. But but you're right. It was the speech that was presented by Steve Jobs. That's what everybody went to back in the day.
Warnock did it. Bill Gates had a lot of those too, you know.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
His roadmap for the future as well, you know.
Absolutely. But let me be specific about what I'm saying, and I think what you first asked me to. If one sits down and reads a lot on a device like these, one discovers there's no reason on an iPad magazine app to have a text in two columns. Or three columns. There's no reason to make it look like a magazine, or to have that interface that you're talking about. We all dream.
Well, this is the argument we keep having in the aggregator world. I mean, there's no reason why you have to divide things up into publications. You know, and I don't understand why people do that.
Well, I think that the great there's a fork in the road. There's probably many forks in the road. My fork says that. Frankly, the whole subscription model, the daily model, all of those, it may find some audience. I'm not going to say it's not going to succeed.
I don't really think it's going to find an audience, right?
No, I don't. I personally don't.
Okay.
I don't,
that's the wreck I want to hear from. That's the whole political wreck. Who wants to be on CNN? You're not on CNN.
Nobody's on CNN, right? It's going to not have an audience.
You know, let me interrupt you one more time. I have this problem with all my friends. Like, Doc Searles comes on here, and he's so in his head, and he's talking like, just talk to me, okay? Talk like we're just, you know, at, you know, T-Rex in Berkeley having a beer, okay?
Okay. It's not going to work. What will work? I will pause, Dave. I have to say that things won't work because they won't work for me, and I have discovered there are people that like stuff that I don't like. So that's the only reason I would say.
Yeah, me too.
It may
and sometimes
work
I'm wrong, too, and you got to factor that in, right?
So sometimes I may be wrong. So I'm going to say it's not going to work for me because the reasons I have discovered I like the iPad is because I can read in a comfortable way.
Yeah.
And using content, and I've discovered I have found through, and this goes back to your earlier questions, through things like Instapaper, I have discovered a way I can take long-form writing from magazines, which, frankly, magazines used to be the master of, and there still are a few out there that do that. I can save them for later, in a format where I enjoy reading and it looks like a book. You know, that's the way I like reading. And that's how I've been trained since the second grade that reading should be. You know, it should be in that format.
So they take a magazine and turn it into a Kindle application then?
Well,
right? Would that be a weird way of saying it?
What magazines should do.
No, but that's what Instapaper does. That's what Instapaper does.
But Instapaper is showing a technology way. Let me talk a little bit about the business side of that. The business side of that is if I have content that people want to read in a way other than the way I present it in a magazine, I shouldn't let the design drive their ability to do that. I should say, hey, I want to develop a relationship with Instapaper where if you want to read it this way, click on it, and that's fine. You can read it.
Well, right. Let's talk about the thing that Readability just came out with. You remember we were talking about this before they announced it. Both you and I got to look at it before it happened, right?
Right.
Now they've
I was probably
it.
The only one in the world who said it was a great idea.
No, you weren't the only one. Actually, there were a lot of people did. So you think it's a great idea?
Well, I think conceptually it's a great idea. But I think it's
are there any publishers that are signing up with it now?
I don't know. I mean,
Are you signing up with it?
I would if we had the right property to do that. I would certainly recommend.
Interesting.
The idea. Let me just briefly say what the idea is. The idea is that there's a recognition on the part of the people who bring these technologies that make things easily read that, hey, this is content that someone created and someone, if I strip out all the ads and make it easy to read, then probably they're not going to like that. And so I better make peace with them. And let's do this. Let's have some sort of model where people pay a little bit and they can do this. And then I'll take, you know, the Instapaper Readability, whatever, will take a cut, and the publisher will get the percentage of, like, if I read a lot from the New York Times, then the New York Times is going to get the majority of what I read using that. There's a lot of, the story about belling the cat, you know, the mice come up with this idea that it'd be great to put a bell on the cat to warn them, and then they decide, okay, who's going to bell the cat? That's a great idea. It's just who's going to put all of that together. It's the real, you know, what publishers going to step forward and do that?
ARC90 did this. They actually have put this business together, right? They're ready to take money.
Well, the concept is there, the ability there, and I think both Instapaper and Readability at least conceptually.
It's more than a concept now, Rex. It's actually a business. You're not the only one. I think it's a good idea, but it's like you said, it's who's going to put the bell around the cat's neck. And the answer here is there is an answer. His name is Steve Jobs. That's the guy who's going to do it. And so when you step out into that kind of traffic as early or as late, actually, because they've already got there. I mean, the 30% thing, which is not, obviously, is not going over very well, right?
We can talk about that.
You heard about that, right? Apple says we'll distribute your. You've heard about it.
No, and I, you know, Dave, I think the 30% thing, I think people have the entire, they're outraged about the wrong thing on that whole bill, but yeah.
Really?
Apple,
should they be outraged about?
Well, the 30% is a bargain for publishers if it's about acquiring subscriptions or distribution. I mean, the cost of acquiring a new subscription and the cost of paper and mail and all of the stuff that you have to distribute is far more than 30%.
What is it? Magazine
model,
what is it actually?
Oh, 100. It's well over 100% of the first year subscription price. But the magazine business works. The consumer magazine business works because advertising. If you can cover your cost with subscriptions, you can make money on advertising. Those apps still have advertising in them that Apple is not demanding a cut off unless you use their model. So, I mean, you're not seeing publishers screaming and hollering about this. You're seeing sort of pundits who maybe don't understand the magazine.
But let me ask you a question. If you were a publisher right now, okay, and you saw them do this, okay, you say, well, the 30% is pretty good, but did their contract say that they will not ever do that to the advertising? Because they could very easily a year from now.
The bag of whatever that you open up when you start trying to claw other ways that people make money that you're not. I mean, Apple does have the ability to monitor the transactions of what happens on the app. They don't have the ability to monitor transactions that are off the app. And when you start talking about, other things, frankly, what if I were a publisher, what I would be, and frankly, what I'm personally outraged and I think is evil about the agreement is the ban that Apple has put on having a link to an outside alternative to make the same purchase or to purchase things. That, to me, is more sinister and has more long-term impact. It frankly undermines one of the whole, fundamental things about the Internet, and that's the hyperlink. If you say you cannot put a link to an alternative to a transaction on this operating system, to me, that opens up issues related to way more than just magazine publishing and the subscription model. That's what I would be fighting. I think the 30% is frankly more of a red herring. Now, there are a lot of people who would argue.
When I asked about that, I was thinking about the whole package. It's like you can't look at one thing in isolation. It's like, healthcare reform, they say, the proponents say, you can't look at one part of it without looking at the whole thing. In fact, the opponents say that too. I mean, is a systematic thing. His 30% would have no weight if you could go, this is the thing I like about Kindle is that I can seamlessly go back and forth between the website and load my, iPad up with more books, and I prefer to read on the iPad, but, this will have the effect of making me read on the Kindle because I want to go to Apple Store to buy a Kindle book. I can't imagine
the agreement says you can purchase on a computer or through the web browser a Kindle book and read it on the Kindle app, but there can't be a link
right.
The way you currently do, that way you click and it takes
you
to the browser.
Yeah, and I'm saying that would be enough of a deal stopper for me as a user.
Yeah.
To say I need to now, the bottom line is the reason why all they have to do with the Kindle is make it backlit, and I will dump the iPad. That's the reason why I like the iPad is because I don't have to have the lights on wherever I can read in the dark. And it may seem like a small thing, but my eyes aren't that good, and arrange things, even if the room is lit, is such that it can't. Do the curling up thing,
I can't agree with you more. And some people, my wife complains when I read books or the Kindle because of what you're talking about, the backlit of the iPad, and I have a little bookcase thing. I can do that. So there is this kind of usability issue that makes the iPad. But there are a lot of
just different.
I argue too that people are. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. We have a latency here, so I'll pause. Go ahead. You go.
I was going to say that people, people are going to buy iPads for reasons other than book reading or magazine reading.
Angry
frankly,
Birds.
So,
that's the killer app.
It's really kind of silly to think that if all the publishers said, don't buy Kindle, don't buy the iPad, that people wouldn't even, they would go, why? I have this app over here that I can follow the tides, and that's important to me because I'm a boater or something. The notion that people just get an iPad for reading books or magazine apps.
No, they don't. That's the other advantage, except the multitasking on the iPad works like crap. It's really no multitasking at all. And, everybody says, when you say that, all the geeks say, well, it's because the apps have bugs. I go, to me as a user, that doesn't waver, doesn't carry any weight at all, you know.
But you
I don't
know,
care
okay.
about why they don't work very well, you know. I care that they don't work very well. And, you know, then I switched to my developer hat, and I remember when the Mac went through this, you know. The Mac
right.
used to, when the Mac first came out in 84, it didn't do multitasking, okay. You ran one app at a time, and frankly, it wouldn't have made a difference if it did, because you only had a very small 128K of memory. It was nothing, you know, to run apps in. So, you know, and that wasn't 128 megabytes. That was 128K.
But they fixed that problem, Rex.
They fixed that problem in a year. It was 1 year, and then you had real multitasking, much better than what you have on the iPad now. And we're like in year what? I mean, 2007, we're in year four, and they haven't fixed it yet. Which
well,
says
I know, we're in year four on the iPod, or their system.
On the iOS.
10 months on the iPad. And,
no, it's not. You see, they're not doing it because it's technically even, there's no challenge to it. The iOS is Mac operating system. It's what it is. It's just another. It's a restricted interface on the Mac OS. It's not because they can't.
Give me an example. Give me an example of where multi. I mean, frankly, here's my non.
Where it matters.
I'll give
you a very good
example.
I listen to music
in the background. I mean,
they did get that right. No, it's come on, Rex. You asked a question. I'll answer it. I mean, I want to be able to. I'm playing Angry Birds, and a move comes in on Words with Friends, okay? And those are two apps that are not multitasking aware, and they take a long time to load. And so just to go see who made the move and what they actually did and to think, you know, about the answer, I'm looking at like a minute to do the round trip, a minute, you know?
Okay.
You know, and it doesn't sound like much when you say it like that, but a minute
in
terms
see,
of
Dave,
how long
Dave. That's the perfect way to learn what the problem is. See, now, a lot of people would hear that and go, what do Angry Birds and, you know, Words with Friends have to do that? That goes back to what I was saying about playing. You learn why
you're preaching
that.
Oh, dude, I got to say, you're preaching the converted. I've been doing that, okay?
Yeah.
No, I've been doing that since the 1970s. That's been my mantra. That's how I taught my programmers to work. And when I saw that they weren't using the program, you know, that's an act of disrespect to the users. You know, if you're not using the software that you create, you know it's unusable, right? It's not a question of if it is unusable. I mean, you know, I had my root. I thought I was making user-friendly software, and until the day when I actually had to watch a user using my software. I remember, if I still remember that, I will never forget that experience. It's like, he didn't even have to do one thing before I knew it was a complete failure. Because all I needed to do, I didn't even need to watch him. I needed just to put my ego into his body. In other words, I had to see it through his eyes.
My rule on magazine apps, or frankly any apps, if you have to put directions at the front on how to use it, then you fail, because I've never had to read directions on a magazine, like how to read this magazine. So
how the user interface was fairly obvious right from the day one, except I'll tell you what, when you were a baby, you probably didn't know how to use it, right? You probably tried to rip it up or stick it in your mouth or whatever. So, you know, and then you fast forward to the very beginning of this little show we're doing here, and how you and I, two grown adults who, whether you like it or not, Rex, you're a very knowledgeable computer user, okay?
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
And to really get that, you should sit down with my mother sometime. You know, people joke about it. Good, my mom.
I spend a lot of time explaining things.
I mean, and then you really see it. I mean, you know, it's not her
really
fault, actually. It's crazy, because if you look at the screen through her eyes, you say, Mom, click on the menu. She goes, which menu?
What's
and
a menu?
Look,
you know,
my God, there are 18 menus on this screen.
When you tell someone to cut and paste something, and they go, what is what do you mean? That's when you know that that people who read TechCrunch or whatever, you know, it's just a microscopic.
Here's the crazy thing I want to try to interesting part here, crazy thing, is like, here's Apple getting a fresh start, right? That's what this iOS thing's all about. It's about, let's start all over again at the beginning and not make any of the mistakes we made the first time, and we'll make a better product at the end. But they're making the same deal. You try the same thing. My mother cannot use an iPad. Jay Rosen is having a lot of trouble. And if you listen to Jay talk about it, you know, I'll have to get him to talk about this on the show, but since I can't point. Because every time I try to point at something, it misunderstands what I'm saying. Now, if you take a computer and you can't, it's so broken that you can't point, that's over. You can't do anything. You can't learn how to use that. You can't get started. And this talk shoe thing was amazing. You know, I mean, why is it so hard to make a phone call? Both you and I know how to make phone calls, right?
Yep. Been doing that a while. I will say, the iPad, I get frustrated when I can't, you know, when I want to block and copy something, you know, and it won't recognize my finger, or I hold my finger down. And, you know, things about it that are really frustrating that they do have the ability to start it over, and they are making some mistakes. That's why I think, frankly, you know, competition's good. I want there to be lots of Android devices and lots of whatever devices, because the more they push each other, the better things will get, perhaps.
I don't think I come to a different conclusion. Of course, that's true. Competition's very good. When people don't have competition, then you end up with, you know, Microsoft Internet Explorer. I mean, that's, you know, the horrible place you end up. But I think that basically we're never going to get really, I mean, the computers we think we deserve, I think that Apple's now proving that we're never going to get those, okay? Because, I mean, if you look at cars are not that easy to use. I mean, you know, when I say cars, I don't mean just literally the car itself, but I mean, you know, the roads and the traffic signs and the traffic lights and other drivers, and when it starts snowing, that's also part of a car. You know, this whole thing about driving is not only is it a very difficult thing to learn how to do, and you have to pretty much do it when you're young. You have to learn how to do it when you're young. If you don't do it, then it's really hard. It's also dangerous. You can also kill yourself, you know. And that's not to say there aren't ways to do that to yourself in the computer. You know, banking sites, for example, if you do the wrong thing, you can end up spending a lot of money, you know. You know, things that have depth and where you have a lot of options, you could make computers easy to use if you very drastically limited what they can do. But I don't think we're ever going to get to that nirvana that we think that we deserve, because I don't think it's really possible, because it requires so many people to buy into the vision to make it actually happen that you just can't get there.
Hey, Dave, I know we're running out of time. I have a question to ask you, and I think I've successfully stalled that on the WikiLeaks question.
We're way over. We're going to go to the hour. I mean, this is like, it's supposed to be 45 minutes, but we're going to go all the way to the hour today.
Okay, well, let me ask you first. You've been posting recently about you're a good tease, and you have something coming up. When is that going to happen?
Happening. If you pay, if you get close enough, you could be using it right now. The thing is, I put layers between. There never really was, you know, when the Radio 8 rollout came. You know, it wasn't like you couldn't have been using it the day before, because you could or the day before that. You could have. It's just that was the day we decided this thing is good enough that it for us to, you know, take over the whole website and go ahead and, you know, say everybody should use it. I'm headed towards that. I mean, that's, you know, I've made a real, you know, it takes time to do the productization on a product. I mean, you have to, you know, achieve a certain level of polish, and you have to iterate, and you have to, you know, and that's what I'm doing. And I've committed to doing that on this product, which is called Radio 2. And it works as a component with River 2, which is two sides of the same, you know, it's like when you put them together, what you end up with is something that works like Twitter, but is not running on any single person server. That's where we're headed. And Right. Yeah. And so
well, it's
if
kind
you
of
want...
fun to be. It's kind of fun to be able to watch. And again, this is where I'm not maybe as technical, but I still am fascinated by the process at that stage of where, you know, things are sort of a sandbox and you're trying things out and you don't mind, you know.
Yeah, no, scripting news is a development tool. I mean, when I say it's part of the business, I'm serious. I mean, it's a development tool because what it does is it has layers of people in it. And those people, when you put them all together, can actually facilitate the shipment of a product. And that's what I'm seeing happening. And you would be totally welcome any day you wanted to join. And all you have to do, I'll tell you what you have to do. You have to go through the EC2 for Poets tutorial. And at the end of that, you'll be left with a server running in Amazon's cloud. And I don't doubt for a second you could do this, okay?
All
a lot
right.
of people think they can't run a server, but you can. A server is not, you know, it's not like learning how to operate a printing press. It's like learning how to operate a laptop. It's nothing like machinery. It's just a computer. And let me just finish the little story. At the end of it, you'll be left with a server. That server will be running some of the software, not all of it. And then you'll should see a pointer to a mail list. You join the mail list, and that mail list will keep you in the loop. I don't think it's time yet for you, okay? The same way, I think of you and Doc Searles as sort of being in the same group as really early adopters, but not pioneers, in the sense that I don't want to try to support you at this stage or yet, because I think you'd be frustrated. I don't think it's the kind of thing you want to be involved in. You know?
Okay.
But as soon as I feel that it's there for you,
I'm happy being in any group that Doc Searles is also a member of. So.
Yeah, well, you guys are in the same group. I mean, you know, you're both humble people, but you're also really smart.
Well, thank you. Now I'll prove that I'm maybe not on the WikiLinks question. I fundamentally.
You got 2 minutes, by the way.
I believe in all of the principles of openness and transparency and all those things that sound good and I frankly would fight for and would probably, if push came to shove, be, you know, a defender of, you know, WikiLeaks. But I do think there are times when diplomacy works better than war, and when one leaks things that may subvert diplomacy, I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the judgment that people, you know, are making, or the power they have to decide what is made public and what is not. We probably are far apart on
We're not. When you start talking, who could disagree with what you just said? Obviously, that's true.
Well,
obviously.
One can disagree with it when they get to the pragmatic or the actual instance
case. No, I mean, I give you another point of view on that. I mean, I don't think that it, a priori, beforehand, I would have thought it was necessarily such a great idea. But once it's done, the question is, what do you do about it? Okay?
Yeah.
And it's done. Now, what you do about it is you use it. And that's exactly what's been happening with some actually pretty amazing results, I think. And in the end, I don't think it really hurt the United States. And maybe somebody used their judgment on that and knew in advance that it wouldn't really hurt the United States. In fact, I think it's helped us. I think it's helped us in that, that's way too long to go into in the remaining time that we have, which is absolutely no time now. I just want to thank you very much.
Rick. All right, thanks, Dave. It was an honor. Thank you.
No, it was a pleasure, and thank you.
No,
honor.
It was a pleasure. It was
okay.
A fun. Okay, it was
hey,
a pleasure.
Hey, I'll see you in New York sometime soon. Okay, Rick?
I'll be there soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.